and welcome to the Geula Mama Show. This is your place for everything pregnancy, childbirth, and babies with emunah and a whole lot of love. I am Tivi Goodman, and I am a midwife, doula, mommy, safta, and the host of the Geula Mama Show. And I'm so excited to be joined today by Sarah Kruse. Kruse, did I get it? I got it this time. Okay, close enough. Not perfect. She is a young mom from Holland, living in Petah Tikva, Israel now, with her husband and two children, a little boy and a little girl, only 6 months old, who is also joining us today. What was her name again? Remind me.
Elba.
What's her name?
Her name is Elba.
Elba.
In Ivrit, you'll write it Alef Lamet Pisuk Bet Hey. That's Elba.
And what does it mean?
Well, it's a Spanish and Italian name. It means sunrise, basically. But in Hebrew, it means God is in her.
Oh, like Hashem El and then Ba, like Betocha. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's so beautiful. Wow, special. So Sarah has a baby in the hospital in the conventional manner, and then Elba was born at home with home birth. So we are very excited today to hear this whole story, how this went. I'm super excited. Let's start from the very beginning. How did you even think of, you mentioned before we were talking that with your first baby, you wanted to have a home birth. So how did that even start? I mean, I didn't even know what home birth was when I was having my first baby.
Well, I'm from a country where home births are very normal. In the last few years, hospital births have become more popular, but home births are a very regular, normal thing in Holland. Nobody, it's not even an issue. Many, many women in Holland give birth at home. My mother tried to birth me at home as well, but because I wasn't exactly in the birth canal, eventually I had to be taken to the hospital. But one of them is known that I want to give birth here. It's nice. Your own clothes, your own bed, your own mug for your cup of tea afterwards. It's just nicer. You have a midwife that you know, that you feel comfortable with. And you can just give birth in your own terms, which I think is very important.
So for you, in the culture that you grew up in Holland, home birth was just standard, normal, something that people choose. And you grew up with that expectation.
Not only that, in Holland, home birth is for free. If you want to give birth in a hospital without any medical reason, then you pay money.
Oh, that's actually, so one of my training is in Swiss childbirth, okay? So it sounds like it's a similar type of thing, that home birth is normal, and you have to have a reason why you would need a medicalized hospital birth. It's like the opposite. Yeah. That must have been such a culture shock, being in Israel then. That's so different.
Not only that, everything was different. I cycled because, you know, in Holland, people use the bicycle. So I used the bicycle when I was pregnant, which was apparently a big deal here. Being pregnant was, you know, don't do this, don't do that. This is dangerous, that is dangerous. And I come from a country where the women don't really get excited as quickly as here. And so that was very hard for me to be treated that way, as if I was ill and as if I was embarking on something extremely dangerous, when fact of the matter is it's beautiful, it's natural, our bodies are built for it. And you know, I'm young, I'm healthy, I assumed everything was going to be fine. She has chosen this moment to be very verbal.
She was absolutely silent before we started the recording. I didn't even hear her voice. Maybe she just wants to say hi. Hello.
Hi.
So then when you had your first baby, here you were cycling, healthy, expecting a home birth. But it didn't go that way, you mentioned, because of expectations from other people.
Yeah, no, not even of other people. I'm not really a person that really cares about other people's expectations, unless it's my husband and me. It was more, first of all, I realized it was very expensive to give birth at home. And I didn't have the budget for that. And my husband was very ill-informed. He had no idea what it was, never heard of it, and I wasn't able to really educate him into it because he wasn't very open to it. So eventually, eventually he came with the argument, you know what, you're my wife and this is also my child, and if something happens to either of you, that would be awful. So that's actually basically how he convinced me to do it in the hospital. But within an hour after,
What's your husband's background? Where did he grow up?
He's Israeli. He grew up partly in Ramat Gan and partly in Shoam. He's half Yemen, half Iraqi. His parents got divorced. His mother got remarried and had two more children after that. Elba. did you hear any of that?
I did. Yes, he grew up in Israel. And his parents got divorced, his mom got remarried, had two more children. So he had seen like the medical model, the typical, go to the hospital.
Yes, he was already 12 when his first sister was born. So yeah, hospital and everything. It's what he grew up with.
Because also at 12, he was old enough to remember that experience. If he had children his age, he wouldn't remember that. But so that made a big impression on him.
Oh my gosh, I can't hear anything. Again, I'm sorry.
I was saying that because he was 12, he was old enough for it to make a big impression on him. Because he was just, approaching those teenage years. And seeing his mother go off to the hospital and have the baby and all those things in his mind, that's what you do, you know. So
it's what a year does.
Right.
Wow. Within an hour of our arrival in the hospital, he realized that he made a mistake. But by then it was too late. We were in the hospital, and
So what made him realize that he made a mistake then?
Well, I planned on having a natural. I planned on having a natural birth. I wanted to try to do it without epidural and without any interference and without any other interventions. And I wanted to be on the move as much as possible. And the first thing they made me do was, they strapped a monitor on me, which meant I had to lie down. And I could not take the contractions, the surges, lying down or sitting down. I had to stand. I had to be on my feet. In order to handle the contractions. And they forced me to lie down with the monitor and don't do that. I'm sorry, she's pulling up my charger. Hold on. Okay. So I couldn't, I refused the monitor basically because it was either I have to lie down and suffer and be not in control and be scared, or I'll defy the rules and protocols and birth the way that I see fit. And they didn't like that, and they tried to scare me, and they tried to intimidate me, and they tried to, eventually they took my husband aside, listen, you need to talk to your wife, she needs to cooperate. And he was like, well, you want to go and tell her that? I wish you good luck, because I've sent out 4 different replies. Told them not to touch me, not to talk to me, I don't want to see you, send someone else. Eventually, they've left me alone there. I was there with my mother and my husband, but they left me alone for hours. And it was very uncomfortable. We're in the room with one tiny bed, one chair, and no bathroom or whatever. It was very uncomfortable. I didn't like it. And only in the very, very, very end, they had a shift change, and they brought in a wonderful midwife. wonderful, wonderful midwife that really saved me. And that was amazing. But I spent a lot of energy on just being angry and being in fighting mode and being basically just being pissed off. You know? Hey! So yeah, it was a bad experience for me. Also, afterwards, it was not good for me at all. We also signed, what's it called? Michtav Vitu, how do you call that?
Michtav Vitu on what?
To leave the hospital earlier than was recommended.
Right, and she signed out against medical recommendation.
Yes, my son was a bit jaundiced. But again, in Holland, lots of babies are jaundiced that are born at home, and it's no, you know, they usually take care of that at home. They usually take care of it at home, you know, like at home, you when the baby's jaundiced, you have the postpartum person that comes to your house for a week every day, and she can look after you and the baby when she's there and help you with the jaundice and everything. So I wasn't worried. My mom used to do that kind of work and I wasn't worried. And the jaundice wasn't like, it wasn't that significant. So I signed papers and we left a day earlier than was recommended. But you're supposed to stay 48 hours. We stayed like a day less. So, because I just didn't want to stay there. Just wanted to go home. I haven't even saved the hospital bracelets. As soon as he was cleared of the jaundice, we were allowed to remove the bracelets and I threw them away. I didn't want a reminder of the hospital.
So you're saying that your mother had also worked as a postpartum doula? So it wasn't just that you...
More in a medical and practical sense. Mm-hmm. But yes.
So not just that you grew up in Holland where it was normal, but you were even used to the postpartum experience and you had your mother there.
Every woman has, whether you give birth in a hospital or at home, every woman has a right. It's in the health insurance package. It's a basic right. Everyone's the midwife physician that is helping you to deliver the baby. And this person after that comes to your home for 8 days, from 8 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon, and helps you with lactation issues, teaches you about diapers, about anything really, helps you around the house, makes sure that the bathroom is clean, makes sure that there's something to eat. If there's a dog, she'll take the dog out for walks. If there are other children, she'll help with the other children. You have that.
This is in Holland, not in Israel.
In Holland, she checks your temperature, she checks your where your womb is at, if your womb is shrinking, she checks your medical status, everything. That's the work I'm going to do.
Yeah, I think that would be amazing. Yes. Wow, we could definitely use that here. And I've given birth in America, I've given birth in Israel. I have never heard of that. Wow.
Yeah, this is the only country in the world where this exists. So.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Crazy. But your mother actually had worked in that capacity, you're saying? She had done that?
Yeah.
All right. So how did that go with your son with his jaundice?
Well, we have a house with a garden, so, and he was born in April. So we sat out in the sun a lot and I nursed them as much as possible. And of course, when the jaundice, they're tired, and then when they're nursing, they fall asleep. So she would, you know, put a cool cloth on his forehead to wake him up a little so that I can keep nursing him. And within 2 or 3 days, the jaundice goes, no big deal.
You just have to know what to do. Yeah.
You just have to know what to do. You just need to educate yourself. I feel that it's good that we have hospitals. It's good that we have physicians. But I also think it's good to educate yourself on everything before you just completely give over your control to complete strangers who might or might not have your best interests at heart.
And that is exactly why we are here today.
Yep.
Share the information. Oh my gosh. Okay, so here we are. You're pregnant again. with your second child, and you're like, okay, we're not having a repeat of that. So your husband was totally on board this time with the home birth?
Yes, he was. I had a very hard pregnancy, not physically, but emotionally, because we had a break in our marriage and we're separated for a while. So that was very hard for me. I was pregnant and alone. So not only was the home birth important to me, it was important to me to have people present that would really make me feel safe, would make me feel loved, that I would feel supported. And I started reading about, you know, how women used to give birth, where all the women of the tribe or of the village were present. The mother and the sisters and the aunts and the neighbors and, you know, the best friends. And it was this whole celebration, you know, where the whole village was part of it. And I wanted something like that, but small scale, obviously. My mother does not live here, but she did fly over for this. My sister lives here, so I asked her if she wanted to be present at birth, and she said yes. And I had my wonderful midwife who she works at Ima Adama. Do you know that place?
I've heard of it online, yeah.
So she,
Tell us about it.
She even owns it. It's a center where she gives courses for women that want to become a doula or doula postpartum. She also gives, you know, she helps couples, you know, prepare for the birth, you know, achnat leda. There are women there that teach you how's it called, reflexology. Shiatsu, baby massage, how to become like a madricha for baby massages, how to become an instructor. They teach you things. And this woman who owns this place, she herself has been a midwife for the last 34 years. And she has been doing home births for the last 10 years. And she worked at the Meir Hospital. She just retired, but she will continue with the home births. And she teaches the doula courses together with others. And one of the women that took the course is my best friend. My best friend just finished the course, and so she's now a doula. And I was her first birth.
Wow.
She was still in training. Because she was my best friend, obviously I wanted to have her there. So I had her and the doula and the midwife, my mother and my sister. Eventually my husband was present as well. And it was very empowering. It was very, you know, people were a bit surprised to hear that there were so many people there. But it was wonderful. It was really wonderful.
Because it was the people that you chose, that you felt supported by each of these different individuals.
Yes, these were all women that love me. These are all women that have given birth as well. These are women that know exactly what it's like to give birth. And you know, they all wanted to, they were all there to help me through this, to celebrate this, to support, to empower me, to encourage me. It was amazing.
Beautiful. So tell us a little bit of the story of how your birth went.
Let's think. On a Sunday morning, kind of early, like around 6:30, I kind of felt like cramps. I'm like,
How many weeks pregnant were you?
I was 4 days overdue.
Mm-hmm.
And the last, like the 2 weeks already, it was kind of getting hard. Like she was pressing down really hard, and it was difficult. And a lot of Braxton Hicks. And so on Sunday morning, I already felt some cramping, but nothing really serious. And then throughout the morning, we just went into the town to buy some things. And then in the middle of the store, I had a contraction. And they're like, no, I'm fine. I'm having a contraction. What? You need to go to the hospital. And I'm like, I'm not going to the hospital. And it just kind of went on and off the entire day, nothing really serious. And that same night around 10, no, somewhere in the afternoon, the what's it called? How do you call that? Yeah, the plug came out. That same day I went to Ima Adama because the midwife wanted to see me. So I went to Ima Adama and she checked me. She said, listen, you don't have any, there's no, you know, nothing's happening yet. You might give birth later tonight or tomorrow. So just relax. Everything's fine. And so around 10-ish at night, it really started. Throughout the day, I made a music list and I kind of updated everyone already. And we at night, we watched a movie in the bedroom with the laptop. We ordered pizza, you know, that we ate in between contractions. And around 4 in the morning, my doula came over. And shortly after, my mother and my sister. And around 6, my midwife came. And a little before 10:30, she was born. But she was... It took a really long time, and it was very hard because I was awake for so long, and I was very, you know, I was just very tired. And she also, she wouldn't come down. She was very high, and it was very hard to help her come down. So with every contraction, I did squats. I went all the way down, and then back up again, and all the way down, and back up again. Lots and lots and lots of squats to help her descend more. And only when I was 9 centimeters, my water broke. So that took a really long time. And I'm sure that in the hospital, they would have interfered with that already. They wouldn't let it go on for this long. And then eventually I was on 4s or 6. And she, my body was pushing. I wasn't even pushing. I wasn't doing anything. My body just kind of took over. It was like a thunderbolt just went up from up there down into my body and just pushed her down more and more. But she was still quite high. Like, they were standing behind me and they said that she was still quite high. And I wanted to call her to me. I wanted to tell her, Elba, come to me. And apparently what I didn't realize is that I called her out loud. And they said that as soon as I called her, they said like it came out of my stomach, like this. And they said as soon as I called her, they saw her suddenly come out, like all the way down. She suddenly, like in one surge, she just came down. And then when the head was born, I pulled her out myself. And that was amazing. I have a video of a series of photos, and the last, and then a part of the video when, like, the moment that I take her and I'm holding her for the first time is also, that's recorded. It's mostly video, it's mostly photos, but that part is a recording. And I've given Ima Adama permission to use that video as well. And if you want to, I can send it to you. But yeah. She took a while to come. She took a while to come out. It was hard work.
Yeah, I was just reading about like those emotional blockages, and it sounded like someone. She was giving an example, like if somebody, I don't know, like is holding on to the pregnancy for some reason, you know. So it sounds like that, like something went through you when you called her to you. Like an emotional release in some way. And like birth is so, like, I always feel like you feel like the heavens rip open and you're like halfway in another world. You're not really living in the everyday regular world of traffic jams and electric bills, you know, like you're in this alternate reality a little bit. So it sounds like what you're saying.
It's like, you know, a primal, like, experience.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And so then at what point did your husband come back? Like, you were there with the women and everything. And it sounds like you guys had been separated, but you said during the birth that he did come.
A month before the birth, I told him to come back home. And that we're going to give this a real shot again. and worked really hard on our marriage. And that was a month before, so he was already home for a while.
Okay.
My son was home because my contractions started to get really strong only in the evening. We decided that he can just stay home and just sleep in a bed in the guest bedroom. By the time my doula came, that was around 4 a.m, she told him to go to sleep. So he just went to sleep in the guest room next to my son, and they woke up around 7. So he kept him busy most of the morning. He was playing with him in the living room. My son knew exactly what was happening. I prepared him. We watched lots of home birth videos together, me and him. He's 4. And are you going to take her? My husband is going to take the little girl. Yeah. and then somewhere later on in the morning, my sister decided that he should be in the room, so she switched with him. She was with my son, and she sent him into the bedroom. At one point, she just gave my son her telephone to watch some YouTube movies, and she joined us in the room as well. And she was a big help as well, because she's got 4 children. All 4 of them were, you know, no epidural, no interventions. And she, what helped her a lot was when she had a contraction that her husband would basically push up against her hands and she would push and he would push her back. And that helped her. And so she did that with him. Yes. And that helped enormously. It was, it really helped. It was wonderful. So it was really great that she was there. And at one point my son did walk into the room when my midwife was checking. She used the Doppler to check the heartbeat, and so he came in to look and everything. He knows all the people that are in the room, which is nice. He also knew the midwife because she came over a few times, and we came over to her place a few times, so he knows her. And it's funny what you said, like an emotional release. After she was born, my placenta wouldn't come out. Like it had gotten loose already, but it wouldn't come out. And then my midwife told me, like, what are you holding on to? You can push, just push it out. And I'm pushing, and it's not coming out. And then as soon as my husband got up and left the room, the placenta came out by itself. Yeah, that was
what bubbles up for you? Like, do you think there's some significance in that, like emotionally or something?
I think so. I'm until today, I'm not really sure. Can't really put my finger on it. I do think that the reason that it took so long for her to come down is because I knew that after everything that happened, there's going to be a whole new chapter now with a second child, with a daughter. A girl, and which is also a thing, because I was really afraid of getting a girl. I was scared of that. I didn't want girls. I just wanted boys. So obviously, after I found out I was having a girl, I talked a lot about that in therapy to see what I can do to make sure that, you know, I won't resent this, that I will know what to do, that I'll be able to celebrate it instead of fear.
Yeah.
So. There were a lot of things. I think there was a lot of fear in letting go of the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because of a new chapter coming.
And how were things, how have things been going since then?
Better than expected.
Yay!
Yes, first of all, she's wonderful. She's amazing. She's just amazing. Can't imagine having, you know, that she would have been a boy instead of a girl, like I wished in the beginning. She's amazing. I look at her and I just see magic and love and beauty, and you know,
she's beautiful. What was I thinking? she's so adorable. Because sometimes I think we just pick things up, you know, in our journey through life. And we don't even really know, like, does it even make sense, you know? So learning, like also with every birth, I feel like we ourselves are birthed into a whole new person. And that sounds almost like what I hear you saying.
Yes. What is it? No. Yes. Her daughter does that. Sorry. He's asking if you need somebody to help you editing it, because he does this kind of stuff.
Oh, thank you. Yes, one of my daughters is 25, and she's the official Geula Mama's editor. So,
yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
He does it on a voluntary basis for Imadama as well. He makes he edits videos and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So maybe, I'm sure we might have questions we can ask him. Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome.
And how, I wanted to know how the postpartum went after having the home birth and you had like all these different experiences and things. Like how was that whole thing different from with your first birth?
It was very different. The funny thing is that with the first birth, I didn't have that pink cloud that everyone was talking about, you know, that as soon as you hold your baby, you forget about the pain, you feel instant love. I did not have any of that. First of all, it still hurted like hell. It was awful. I did not feel love. I did not feel any connection. I did have this really strong instinct of protecting him with everything that I have. That I did, but I did not have this, you know, the pink cloud that everyone talks about. And I thought there was something wrong with me. It only came after a few days. And with her, I had that immediately. Now with him, I had no weird emotional ups and downs or whatever. And with her, the first few days, I suddenly felt very overwhelmed and I was crying and I got scared. And what was I thinking? And how am I going to do this? And, you know, like, I did not expect that. I'm happy that my mother was there. She was like, this is normal. Everything's going to be fine. So that was different. And you would think that if you give birth in your terms in your own home, that you know, you would feel great afterwards. But that was not the case. It was very hard.
Like, you did have the pink cloud right afterwards. Like, yes. Initially, you're saying, but then it went into, I mean, the overwhelm and what was I thinking could be just like, now you realize you have two kids and soon you're going to be alone with them.
I remember that I went to the bathroom. I had, I wasn't torn, but I did have a scratch. And whenever I had to pee, it would burn terribly. So I would sit in the bathroom, scared it's about to come. And I heard her crying. And I heard him, the baby, my son, screaming and yelling about something. And I'm sitting there waiting for the pain to come. And I'm like, how am I going to do this? How on earth am I going to do this? She's crying. He's yelling. I'm in pain. What was I thinking? What did I get myself into? And instant regret and fear. And that was very overwhelming. And I had just sudden cry sessions about nothing, just crying and feeling horrible. And after a week, it passed. And that was a strange experience for me.
So you did though set up that in those first few days, you had a lot of support and you had a lot of help during that time. That was really smart, because really that would have been, I know sometimes there are moms who have a newborn, have other kids, and they're recovering and they don't set up that help for themselves. And it really can be overwhelming.
Yes, I think it's really responsible to go into this journey not preparing yourself for everything, especially today in this day and age that you have Facebook and Instagram and the internet, blogs, so many blogs. You know, it's very easy to read about when you're pregnant, to read about these things and to prepare yourself for it. I think it's the responsible thing to do for yourself, to make sure that you have a support system, to make sure that she prepared for these things. Even when my son was born, I knew that I was going to nurse him. But I also knew that there might be a chance for some reason or other that I won't be able to. So I, you know, purchased some formula, some bottles, make sure that just in case I can't, in case it won't happen, I will have this at hand. You know, I just think you need to be prepared for anything. And a support system is important. I think society today is starting to really wake up to the importance of women being there for women the way we used to be. And I also think that today also husbands, they're getting more and more information. You know, starting a family, it's something you do together. And we each have their own, what's it called? Role in it, of course, but it needs to fit. We talked about how, before I even got pregnant, how we saw this, how we thought of how to raise him, what our values are, what are, you know, the morals, the values that we want to teach him, and what is important for a baby, for a toddler, for a young boy. And we still learn, and we still talk about it, and we still grow, and we still discuss these things every day.
Mm-hmm. Now, so by the time your emotions were getting a little bit more balanced and you were healing and you had those support people with you, so as they were sort of leaving, you were more balanced. And then how has it been for the last 6 months? Like, do you feel like you kind of got through that?
It's a bit intensive because we homeschool, actually unschool. Our son is not in Ghana. He's not going to go to Ghana. He's not going to go to school. So, you know, it's intensive. I take him to his meetups to make sure that he has a social life and everything. And, you know, it's hard to get out of the house when you have another baby. Suddenly, you know, I used to be able to get everything ready in 15 minutes and leave. And now it can take up to 2 hours because, you know, she's a nurse and then she falls asleep and then she poops. And then, you know, and then in the meantime, he has pulled out toys or whatever, you know, and he's hungry and he wants to eat something. And so it takes longer to leave the house. It's frustrating. Lots of interrupted sleep, obviously. We co-sleep, so that makes it a little easier. But still, you wake up a lot for the baby. So, yeah, we drink coffee. I don't really have a schedule yet. I remember that with my son the first year, he was not on a schedule at all when it comes to sleeping. And I'm just trying to let go of that a little bit, you know. Like, now he is on a schedule, I find that important for him, but she's not on the schedule yet, which is, you know, challenging.
Right. I hear, like, a lot of what you're saying is reminding me, because I also did, like, the co-sleeping. I was a homeschooler / unschooler for 5 years. After I made Aliyah, I don't have the benefit of having an Abba who speaks Hebrew. So both of us are Americans, we're both English speakers, and I didn't want my kids to be cut off, like, live in Israel but not be Israeli. So I made the decision to send them to school, which was not, even on a daily basis, it's not necessarily an easy decision for someone who has that homeschooling / unschooling in their heart. But on the other hand, it does force you to be on a schedule. So, you know, everything always has the benefits and the drawbacks to it.
Yeah, well, I like that I can keep her, you know, that she doesn't have to, what's it called, to adapt herself to my needs. I think in the first year it's important that I adapt myself to her needs, as far as is reasonable for me. I, after all, am the one who brought her into this world. She did not ask to come here, at least not consciously. It's my job to make sure that she has a good start. So I adapt myself to her needs, and I don't think she should have to be forced. Force is perhaps a bit of a harsh word, but, you know, that she, you know, can sleep when she needs to, that she can eat when she needs to, not when I need her to sleep or when I need her to eat. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a bit challenging because there's two now. So.
Right. And two is a lot more than one. It's two is not like just one more than one. It's like there's a multiplication thing going on. It's like a lot more than one because they tag team off of each other, you know.
Yes. Sometimes they gang up on me together as well. She's doing well. She's actually a very, very happy baby. She's very content. She's smiling a lot. She only cries when she has a real need to be held or she's hungry. Other than that, she's just happy and easygoing. And why shouldn't she? She sleeps next to when she wants to. She's over here. You know, she's got cloth on her butt because she's cloth diapered. I mean, it's a good life.
Part of me wanted to try cloth diapering. I was a little bit nervous about more laundry to do. When I had my second to youngest, number five, my friend was going to give me all her cloth diapers because her baby was already bigger. And my husband said, no, I'm drawing the line. You're already overwhelmed with laundry. You don't need more. And you're already, you know, co-sleeping and natural this and that. You're doing everything. You're just going to have to buy diapers and throw them away.
Yes. Yeah, so I bought diapers when I was still pregnant with my first one. I was a nanny for about 10 years. So I always used disposables and I hated them. And I was like, why can't we use cloth diapers like we used to 30, 40, 50 years ago? Why can't that? And then I just suddenly found online this whole community of cloth diaper people, like, what? Fell in love with it. And of course, when you have five, it seems that all you ever do is laundry. So I can understand that your husband drew the line there.
Yeah, I think it was a wise decision. It was, I was excited in the moment, but afterwards, with all the things that I was juggling and dealing with, I felt like it was probably really smart of him to kind of say, I think he said, you know, if down the line, as you're managing and recovering and everything, if you want to try it and you want to deal with it, like, I don't really care. But I was making that decision when I was like a day postpartum. And he's like, no, you don't need this right now. <You know>? Like, highs and lows.
Wow. Yeah,
that was a question. If you what's that?
Also with two, it's, you know, it's a lot less laundry, but still it's work. It's work to keep up and to keep the smell out of the house and to, you know.
Right.
Make people run out of diapers because they're piling up or something. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's another whole job. And, you know, like my mother actually did cloth diaper, which is why I thought it was exciting. But after my hormones calmed down a little bit, I was like, oh, she had a diaper service who used to like pick up the dirty bag and bring a clean bag. That was all there was to it. Like, she wasn't doing any of that work.
My mother-in-law also, my husband was in cloth diapers when he was a baby. And she also, here in Israel, there was a diaper service that would pick up the dirty diapers and, you know, bring the clean ones. And this, you know, you have to do yourself. But the diapers of today are very cute. Like the white boy ones of 30 years ago. That makes it all better.
I've seen them online. They're so cute today.
They are. They're amazing. That's also something. I had this big stash of my son, and it's all like boyish diapers. Okay, I have enough diapers. I can't really justify to buy more, you know, ones with pink and butterflies and flowers and everything. It's cute, but I can't really justify to buy more. And then my family conspired behind my back, and they, in a very sneaky way, found out which diapers I like the most, and then behind my back, they ordered them for me. Oh, so that she has some girly diapers. I have an amazing support system. I have good family and friends, and I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that I've been asking for that. I try to invite this into my life. Anything that is toxic, I kind of keep away. Toxic people, I don't even let them cross the threshold. I ask for the love and support and encouragement and empowerment and all the good things that, you know, that do exist in this world.
Wow. I think that that's something that's so important to ask for, because I know for myself, I definitely struggle with asking for help and asking for that support. And like you were saying, with the world of Facebook and technology and support groups and everything, you can take advantage of it, but it doesn't mean that a person still knows how to ask for the right people. And, you know, some people, I see them online and they're kind of asking for this general support from like a 2,000 people who don't even really know them. But you're not saying that. You're saying like, I got support here, I got education here. But when it comes down to it, there are real people in my real life who really know me, and I share with them how they can support me in a way that makes me feel supported. And that's an art form, you know?
I think that's taking responsibility for your own life, really. Not only asking for help, also accepting help is something that lots of people don't know how to do, how to accept help. That was something that, after my son was born, actually someone else taught me it's okay to say yes. If somebody asks you, you need help, you can just say yes. You don't need to feel embarrassed about it. Why else would they ask you? Which is also something she I found her online as well. When my son was born, I was completely alone. My sister did not live here yet. I had no friends with babies the same age or whatever, living nearby, nothing, nobody. Started going to the playgrounds in the morning, only found Russian speaking nannies. I started going to the playgrounds in the afternoons, only found these really busy career women that just came home from work. I could not find anything or anyone. Everybody thought I was weird because I was nursing in public and I had a baby carrier and had no stroller and I used cloth diapers and we're vegan and we're weird and he's not going to gun and I'm not working, and you know, so I could not find any connection whatsoever anywhere. And then I found a Facebook group for like crunchy mothers. I don't like the label, but whatever. And so I introduced myself. I told them where I lived. I live in this neighborhood. Are there any mothers out there that would like to meet up? And then one of the mothers contacted me. She lived in the same neighborhood as me, and she's this complete hippie, like a bona fide, real, true hippie that does not take showers, like does not shave, you know, that kind of person. And she introduced me to this whole world of women that are just like us, and that's how I found it. And that's what I meant with, you know, you take responsibility, you go look for it, you go find it, you go, you get creative, you find a way to get what you want or need, and you ask for it. I ask in the group, does anybody want to meet me up? I'm lonely, I'm alone, I don't know what to do. Thank you. And I didn't even ask for it and you brought it to me. I think it's important to teach our daughters to ask for help, to accept help, to take responsibility, to know that there's always a way to find what you need. And even in our marriage, you know, like we used to think that we're supposed to make each other happy, you're supposed to know how I feel, you're supposed to know what to do, because we've been together for so long. But that's not the case. You need to ask for things. You need to be clear about things. You need to, you know, take responsibility.
Well, I love that, because this other friend and this, all these women were actually right there the whole time. But if you hadn't asked for them, you wouldn't even have known that.
No, I would not have known them. And I would have missed out on a lot of blessings.
Wow. You know, it took me years to admit that I was crunchy, by the way. this whole like crunchy mamas thing, you know? Like I was sitting there, you know, yeah. homeschooling yeah. And oh, the list goes on and on and on, basically doing everything crunchy, except for eating granola, maybe, you know?
I don't like granola either.
And it just took me years to admit, because I don't know, I didn't feel like I looked the part or I acted the part. Everything was just kind of under the surface. So I have a question. What's that?
No, sorry. No, nothing.
I have a question. I want to go back to your birth, okay? Looking at your birth with Ella, if you could change something or could do something different or could advise anyone anything different, is there any, would you want it to be exactly the same, or is there any advice you would kind of give yourself or like give another mama that might be going through something similar?
If there's anything I would have done differently?
Yeah.
Or would have wanted differently?
The wisdom you have now and the experience, obviously what was had to be, but we can always look back and say, hey, you know, with my wisdom now, I would have done X, Y, and Z differently. And then we learn for future and for friends, you know?
Nope. I was very, 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 very well prepared. I visualized constantly what I wanted. I wanted to give birth in a crouch. Eventually I gave birth in all six, but later on I also learned that that's actually the best way. But no, I can't think of anything I would have wanted. Duri, is there anything that I would have wanted differently after birth? Did we ever discuss that? I can't. שאלת את אלבה. אחרי זה היה איזה משהו שהייתי רוצה שהיה שונה, שהייתי עם שנה, הייתי... Yeah, I got it exactly. Yeah, I got the exact...
Okay, so I have one thing. I have one thing, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong here. When you were in labor in the beginning, right, and then the hard labor didn't start, like the real labor didn't start until like 4 o'clock in the morning, right? Or like four.
And that's why my doula decided to show up, because I was already like 5 minutes apart, and it was already very painful. So yeah.
So then, by the time you gave birth, it was around 10 in the morning, right? Right, on the next day. And you were really tired, you said.
I was awake since Sunday morning, 6:30, and I gave birth on Monday morning, 10:30. So
okay. So my thing would be when the contractions and the rushes and everything were easier the day before and the night before, did anyone tell you to take a nap to go to sleep during that time?
I also tried to sleep, but I couldn't.
Okay. So you were resting, but you couldn't fall asleep.
Yes, I was resting a lot. Yes, absolutely, because I knew I needed the strength. Mm-hmm. My mother also kept pushing me, you know, make sure you rest, make sure you sleep. You need your rest. You need your sleep. Build up your strength. Mm-hmm. And I remember about 2 days before labor, I kind of knew that it was coming because I suddenly was very hungry. And I was eating a lot. And I think my body was getting prepared to start the hard work. Basically, I remember I had a lot of craving for coconut oil, so I was eating, like, it was winter, so the coconut oil was congealed, and I was like eating spoons of coconut oil, and it, I don't know, like the fat, I think I had a craving for it. And
wow.
Yes.
So maybe that's one of like it's so interesting how our bodies ask for things and demand things that we don't even know, like our brains, we have no idea why that would happen. But you listen, first of all, you listen to your body, which is so important. You didn't rationalize it and say, no, I shouldn't have coconut oil, or I should, you just went with it, which is, it's so important, you know? Yes. Who's coming out? One moment, I have intruders. All right, they're gonna wait. Well, we're finishing up anyways. Oh, I wanted to say one more thing. You know how we were saying how like asking for the things that you need, accepting the things that you need, and the support and finding that support. So I also noticed that you also give support, because I put out a request saying, hey, who wants to tell their birth story? You know, this can be inspiring, can be helpful to other women. And you were like the first one saying, I will, I'll tell my story, you know, and taking this time to share with us, that's giving. So it's not just that you.
It's important that women start to get, you know, more proactive in their needs, and that they stop apologizing for it, and that they know their strength, that they can listen to their bodies, that they have the right to give birth the way they need to take care of their babies the way they need to, and people need to be educated and informed, I think.
So the whole point of Geula Mamas is, like, I sort of envision, you know, like the women, like when we left Mitzrayim, when we left Egypt, how the women came together, and we had our tambourines, and there were the midwives, and like the women brought all that wisdom and power together. And I just feel like there's so much wisdom. Every single woman that I talk to, and men are great too, I mean, whatever, but I'm a woman, this is my thing, right? Like, there's so much wisdom. So just trying to sort of collect that, bring together. Your story is so powerful. It's so amazing on so many levels. And I know it's going to help so many women to feel supported, to learn lessons from it, to bond together. I mean, you just said so many beautiful things. So it's like exactly with the mission, you know, like sharing it. Oh my gosh, very exciting. And I appreciate it so much. So I have one last question for you, Sarah. If you could, like, okay, so I always say, like, envision yourself like at Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai, and you're talking to all the women in history, right? So talk about bonding together, like basically just envisioning all of the women, Jewish women and not all the women of the world. All the ones that are ever going to be born, whoever were born, the newborn babies, everybody. And you just had like one thing to say to them. What's the first thing?
Wow, one thing.
There's no right or wrong. Just like one thing.
Well, the one thing that really resonates with me is to be kind to yourself. Love you first. Love you first. Be nice to yourself. Like yourself. It's okay. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to. You should.
Oh my gosh. That is such a big deal. Like, liking oneself, it almost seems taboo. You know?
But I think that's where the source of most issues have is, like, that's the source of most of our issues, I think.
Yeah. I actually just heard a class, and the rabbi was saying that is one of the biggest sources. Like, we all talk about it, and we have, you know, we've all worked on self-esteem on the outside, but inside, to really like yourself, to really accept yourself, he was saying, like, that is the work of our generation. That is the biggest deal that we're all dealing with.
Wow. Well, the rabbi agreed with me.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. And thank you to your husband and to your adorable baby for sharing this time and giving this time. Oh, I wanted to tell people, Ima Adama, that you keep mentioning, means Mother Earth, which is such a beautiful name for like a midwifery practice and all the support and things they do. That's so beautiful. And it's really cool that he's volunteering and editing for them. It's just, you guys sound like awesome people. Maybe one day we'll meet in real life and not virtually. I'd love to get to know you more. And
that would be nice. Do you also have a thing that I can follow, or just YouTube?
Yes, I'm gonna send you the link to join the Geula Mamas Facebook group, and everyone can connect with you, and we'll all get connected, and we'll support each other. And empower each other. And goodbye, ladies. I love you, and Hashem loves you. Be well. Goodbye.